Good morning. My name is Byron Johnson. I'm going to moderate this session. We're going to go ahead and try and stay on schedule. And I'm going to go ahead and introduce Matt Stanford. I think that the format is that we'll let each person present and then take a couple of questions at the end of the presentation, but maybe not more than one or two questions just to stay on track. So, Matt?
All right, thank you. Matt Stanford, I'm faculty here at Baylor, and I, while my main area, and my degree is in neuroscience, my main area of interest is impulsive and aggressive behavior, I have a sideline research that deals with how the mentally ill interact with the local church. And so over the last 3 to 4 years, we've been looking at the interactions between mentally ill Christians and the local church, and then also looking at the understandings and perceptions of ministry staff in the context of mental illness and mental illness treatment. And so today I'd like to present some preliminary data on a survey that we completed earlier this year on Texas Baptist pastors and their views and understanding and training in the recognition of mental disorders. But first I'd like to, I'm going to mess up to begin with here. First I'd like to actually I'll begin with some introductory comments related to mental illness. Mental illness is a terrible problem in the United States. 26.2% of Americans will suffer from a diagnosable mental disorder this year alone. It affects people in the church and out of the church equally. There's still a tremendous stigma in the church or in the general public, but even more so in the Christian church, strangely enough, towards those who have mental disorders. So many people often will suffer in silence and not seek the treatment that is necessary. They are the leading cause of disability in the United States and Canada for those 15 to 44. And the economic costs are tremendous. Just the indirect costs alone have been estimated at over $72 billion annually. So it's a tremendous problem. And the fact that, you know, a quarter of, or 26.2 million Americans are going to suffer this year is strange, because when I interview pastors, they tell me they almost never see anyone who has mental illness. And that is very consistent. I have yet, frankly, to sit down with a pastor who's told me that they've ever seen more than one person that ever had a mental illness, even if they've been in the ministry for 20, 30 years. So it's possible that they aren't recognizing it, which is certainly true, but certainly what's happening is individuals are not sharing with them that they actually have mental disorders, and we'll look at some of the reasons why that might be in a moment. Now, in the context of mental illness and the religious community, a lot of research has shown that faith communities, religious support systems are tremendously therapeutic. For instance, one of the things that we do know, and this is something that's been known for over 50 years, is that an individual who's experiencing psychological distress is more likely to go to a ministry staff person or a clergy member before they ever go to any other professional individual. That's a consistent thing. It's been found, like I said, for the last 50 years. That actually goes for non-believing individuals as well as believing individuals. There's a lot of factors that can drive that. For instance, just outside of Waco here, if you look around, Waco is a relatively small community, but outside of Waco, in many of the rural counties, there are no mental health care providers in the entire county. So the person that's most accessible, the person who's most willing to sit down and listen to you, very often is the pastor at the local church. And so these people are accessible, and people with psychological distress will go in and see them. Often they don't go in and say, I have depression, I have schizophrenia. Often they go in and say, my relationships are falling apart, my finances are bad. And I think that may be one of the reasons that pastors aren't really recognizing that they're dealing with people with a more severe problem. In psychology, we refer to the gatekeeper model, which is in somewhat, I'm kind of laughing because it's very funny, it's sad in a sense. We believe in psychology, and this has always been taught, and we tend to teach our students, the gatekeeper model works this way. We are the mental health care professionals, and we will deal with the mentally ill. And since we know that they go to pastors first, pastors will recognize that they have a serious psychological distress issue, and they will refer them to us, and then we will help. The problem is the pastors have no training on how to recognize mental illness, and there's a stigma in the church, so they're not being told that individuals have mental illness. So the gatekeeper model from its inception has been a flawed and broken model, although even to this day you can still find plenty of articles written on this gatekeeper concept, yet you can almost find no training for pastors in mental health care recognition or treatment. In fact, even in this wonderful seminary that we stand in today, there is no training for any pastor in anything beyond basic pastoral counseling. So, religious social support systems for psychologically distressed individuals actually are more effective or more therapeutic than general social support systems. We know that for the mentally ill, for an individual to be able to be treated effectively and to recover, it's very, very important that they have a structure around them, a social support system. But what's been demonstrated is that they have a strong religious social support system around them. They actually recover more quickly and more fully than a general social support system. And so the religious community is tremendously important in the context of recovery. And they play a key role in recovery from psychiatric illness. But unfortunately, what we've been seeing is really just the opposite. So I'd like to review two studies that we've done over the last 3 years, looking specifically at mentally ill Christians about their interaction with the local church. And combined, these two studies represent over 400 surveys and interviews with mentally ill believers. All of these individuals were diagnosed by a mental health care professional with a diagnosable mental illness, and then approach their church in relationship to some type of assistance, usually just simply some type of pastoral counseling or something like that. Now, one of the first things that we found, and one of the most discouraging things that we found, is that about 30 to 40% of these interactions were very negative, in which the individual was actually told, you do not really have a mental illness. The disorder you have is somehow spiritual in nature. It's sin or demonic, and I'll talk about that in a moment, but that mental illnesses simply don't exist. What you're saying is more of a spiritual problem. You don't really have, in a sense, and I'm not talking about perhaps a person was just sad. These people were already diagnosed. You don't have bipolar disorder. You don't have schizophrenia and things like that. The severity of the disorder between individuals who were told that they did not have a disorder and those in which their local church was accepting and affirming of their disorder were no different. They were of equivalent severity. In the second study particularly, we specifically assessed the severity of the psychological distress, and these individuals would have fallen into a category of severe psychological distress. We used a CDC assessment for psychological distress. Another question that had come up in the early study was perhaps these were fringe connected congregants, that they only show up for this assistance this one time and they weren't really recognized, and that was the problem. We assessed through a number of scales, looking at the strength of their faith and their connectivity to the church, that indeed the faith of the individual whose mental illness was denied was equivalent, and actually those whose faith denied actually attended church more often than those whose faith was not denied. So it wasn't an issue of being unconnected to the church and showing up, and it wasn't an issue of perhaps they really didn't have a mental illness and the church correctly saw that. These people were equivalent, and they were very serious disorders, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and so forth. What we did find in the second study also were that more conservative their theology, and also churches that would label themselves as charismatic or spirit-filled, were churches that were more likely to attribute a spiritual cause to the disorder and deny the disorder. And when the disorder was denied, when the person was told, you don't really have a disorder, these were the three most common bases for the disorder that were thought. It was a personal sin issue, it was an issue of weakened faith, or it was the demonic. And then finally, I thought, for me personally, kind of the most disturbing thing is that women, more likely than men, were told that their disorders did not exist. And again, those women had equivalently severe psychological distress and equivalent faiths. So there was some concern there that women were being, there was a bias against women. Now, one of the things that we find in the literature is that, in general, women tend to go to more conservative churches, and it may be a result of just that, in that we did find that more conservative churches were the ones that were denying that. Now, you may ask yourself, you know, what's going on here? I think there's a number of things, and I want to show you some data in a moment about the perceptions of Texas Baptist pastors specifically on mental illness. And I think there's a few things that go on. Number one, individuals that take a more literal interpretation of the scriptures, a more conservative theology, are more likely to recognize spiritual involvement in any daily activity, so they're more likely to be receptive to that. And I think that's very affirmative. But they They also are going to have a tendency, or at least from surveys, have been shown to be a little bit more fearful of science because of the kind of ongoing, particularly its ongoing origins debate that you see. And so I think you see a kind of a shying away from science. And thirdly, psychology and psychiatry have never been friends of the faith. They have many sins to atone for, so, and I'm not here to do that. But they, there's a lot of distrust of psychology and psychiatry in general. So I'd like to talk about our Texas Baptist study. I first wanted to say that, unfortunately, we did not get a very good response rate. I was told ahead of time, we actually worked with the Baptist General Convention of Texas, which is an affiliation of Texas Baptist. They were very interested in this study. They told me ahead of time, our pastors don't respond to anything. They won't respond to us. So they're gonna, and I was actually told, you're going to probably get about 15%. And we got 16.8% actually responded. So they have tried everything. In fact, just yesterday I was emailing back and forth with their statistician, and he said, we really have this important survey we want to get out, but we can't actually get ourselves to do it because we know we're only going to get like 10% of the responders. So what we got was a small sample. I think it's an interesting sample, and I'm going to give you some demographics on it, although I think it is not fully representative of BGCT as a whole, which is actually quite a diverse group of pastors. This is really only one subset of the pastors. I think you'll see that the pastors that we did respond really do kind of fall into a single category. This was done via email. An email request was sent out to 999 contacts. The emails were given to us by the BGCT. And then we had 168 responses. There was a one-week follow-up and then a one-month follow-up email also. And then they would go, there was a URL they would click and go to a website that had a approximately 10 to 15-minute questionnaire that was going to ask them specifically about their perceptions and knowledge and any prior training they might have in relationship to mental illness. Now, as far as the sample goes, what we basically ended up with is a sample of highly educated, suburban pastors who are white. That's basically what we got. There's a tremendous consistency in that as far as the respondents go. They're only 10% were minority. So again, there's another problem with the BGCT. They said they have tremendous problem getting the minorities to respond, and that they were hoping we would get a little bit more minority response. But you see, 50% suburban, mostly doctorates or masters, highly educated, but a good period of time in the ministry, 48.2 year age of the average age. But these are large churches with fairly affluent congregations. You can see the average there. So that's what you need to imagine as we go through this data. We're basically looking at large suburban churches that are predominantly white and affluent, and those are the responses. And I think when you think of it that way, that it, in a sense, makes the data even more interesting. Because traditionally, as I've been presenting these and publishing some of these papers, the thought has tended to be that, well, you know, Christians are just dumb anyway. And particularly these rural fundamentalist Christians is the kind of thing I hear a lot. And that's who's doing this. But that's not who responded to this. Now, theologically, they describe themselves as tremendously conservative, which that's the reason I was interested in the BGCT and the Baptist pastors, because remember, it's the conservative and or churches that describe themselves as charismatic that are more likely. So I anticipated that this would be a very theologically conservative group, and it is. What surprised me was that 53.6% of them actually said they had gone to a seminar or course on mental illness at one time. That was surprising to me. Now, just a few of the kind of general questions that we ask, and most of these are on a 10-point scale for them to rate, rating what your general knowledge of mental illness is, and you can see it's right in the middle. So I took that as they're very questionable in their own mind of how well they really recognize this. They do recognize that there's some, they don't have the full understanding of this, and it's right in the middle. Now, how often are your counselees diagnosed with a mental illness? 2.68. Okay, so not, you know, that's almost the lowest, which is not often. And that's what I found in my own personal interviews with pastors also. Very rarely do they believe they ever see anyone with a mental illness, which if you just go with the probabilities, particularly these pastors, remember, these are pastors that are in suburban areas you know, this is, they're very likely to see a lot of mental illness, although they don't think they do see it. How likely are you to refer to a physician? This gets, these are some questions that got at the gatekeeper model, psychiatrist, psychologist, and we actually had offered a list of different ones, but they were varied on whether, on their faith or not. Sometimes they knew their faith, sometimes they didn't know their faith, sometimes they knew they were Christian, sometimes they didn't know what they were, and then they would make selections. And basically what you find in a summary sense is this: if they know that the mental health care provider is a believer, is a Christian, they're very likely to refer to them. But if they don't know, so either if they know that they're not, or they just don't know, they won't refer. And so in that context, it's what you find most often, again, this is mostly through interviews that I did for a previous study, is they don't have any contact with the mental health community, so they really don't know what the faith of the providers are, so they tend to just not make referrals. And so one of the things that we do in some of our pastor training in the context of this is teach pastors how you can go about making an appropriate referral. And one of the things I tend to tell pastors is no one will pass up a free lunch. And that is, if you call the counselor in your community or a psychiatrist and you say, I'd like to take you to lunch, they'll go. And then you can ask them those questions. And if they don't like you asking those questions, then you don't send your people to them. But if they are fine, oh yes, I go to the Methodist church, I grew up a Methodist, and I don't know what. If you're satisfied with the responses, now you have an ally in this and you have someone that you can feel comfortable referring to. Strangely enough, that seems like an amazing thing when I describe it to pastors. They never ever think to even do that. Finally, likely to participate in a seminar, and again, they tend to be more likely to do it if possible. But again, remember, 53% of these people actually had already been involved in one, which was very surprising to us. Now, on this first one, when they're asked in the abstract, just when the term mental illness is used, and they're asked to rate the efficacy of treatment. So they're given, in this instance, these are clusters. They're given a number of questions related to medical treatment or psychiatric treatment, pastoral counseling, psychological therapy, and then what would be called a deliverance ministry, more of the kind of a supernatural, almost a kind of demonic, removal of demonic spirits type of thing. So there's a number of questions that go around with each one of these, and they're asked to rate those on how effective do they think that would be in treating mental illness. That's asked in the abstract. There's no specific disorder. And you find here that they actually rate medical intervention, which clearly was a description of medication and things like that, pastoral counseling and psychological therapy, secular psychological therapy, equivalently. There's no difference between those. And the deliverance is significantly different. Very few felt that that was efficacious. Now, that's exactly what I would have expected from Baptists, because they tend to not be involved in these types of deliverance ministries. And we have very, very few people in this group that describe themselves as charismatic. So it's unlikely that they would be receptive of this. And we expected that. But pastoral counseling, which clearly was a description of the person sitting down with a ministry staff person and praying and being involved in kind of spiritual guidance, medical intervention, psychological therapy, equivalent. Again, now they're asking the abstract, just mental illness. Now, I had a feeling that really what was going on was not so much that, from our previous studies, people are dismissive of all mental disorders, but I have a feeling that they were dismissive of certain mental disorders. And indeed, that's kind of what we can see in here. Now, they're not asked if they're dismissive of the disorder here. They're simply asked to rate again on a scale how much they consider this to be a contribution to a given disorder. So there's a number of questions that ask about a biological basis, a number of questions that ask about environmental influences, a number of questions that ask about spiritual influences, such as spiritual poverty, lack of faith, lack of a prayer life, things like that. And then those are clustered. And they're asked specifically and separately about these different disorders: major depressive disorder, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, anxiety disorders, and attention deficit. Those were chosen because they are the most common, and schizophrenia, for instance, is tended to be looked at as the most extreme. ADHD was chosen because it's very common in Christian circles, particularly for that to be attributed to poor parenting as opposed to any type of a brain problem. And what you find here is very interesting, I think, and this is why I'm really discouraged that we didn't get a few more people. They're different in how they look at them. If you look at, for instance, bipolar disorder and schizophrenia, which are serious and very severe disorders, not to say that the other ones aren't, but they're very extreme, disorders, you see that they rate the biological influences extremely high, and they give very little to the environmental or spiritual. And indeed, there's a significant difference between those. When you look at something like depression or anxiety disorders, you actually find that even though that looks like there's a little bit of difference, there's no statistical difference between their ratings for biological, spiritual, and environmental. They tend to rate those equivalently, that they are all. Now, I'm certainly not saying that there aren't those influences, but what I'm saying is that perception that the spiritual is equivalent to the biological, I do believe is leading some to and ultimately deny the biological and move down more of a spiritual road. And then finally, in ADHD, it was particularly different. While they did rate the biological as high, you see this extremely high environmental, and it's actually oddly different than the other ones. And that was driven by a single item, and that single item was poor parenting. That's what drove that. So you clearly could see that they believed that there was a parenting aspect to ADHD that was perhaps different than some of the others. So what I think this suggests to me when I look at this, is that some disorders are more likely to be attributed to spiritual things, whereas others are more likely for the person to just wholly put a biological on there. I think both of those are probably incorrect. I would say, and we tend to do in our workshops and in the material that we produce, more of a holistic approach that all disorders have biological, environmental, and spiritual aspects that need to be dealt with, some more than others, depending. I also think if you look at major depression and anxiety disorder, there's something that kind of hit us as we looked at this. Lots of people say they're depressed. And we use psychological terms very cheaply in our society today. Same thing with anxiety. I've heard many people say that they have obsessive-compulsive disorder because they're overly neat. We use those. We throw them around all the time. No one's ever said to me, you know, I'm feeling awfully schizophrenic today. So there's no real subclinical aspect of that, although I think we could, you know, as scientists, as clinicians, we could talk about subclinical aspects of schizophrenia. But in the general public, no one ever talks about being a little bit more psychotic today than they were last week. But they certainly talk about being more depressed than before. Or say, for instance, they have a death in their family. I'm very, very depressed. Well, they are. They have a blue state that is probably going to be fleeting and passing over a period of time. So I think one of the things that's happening is that what the pastors, in a sense, are kind of inundated with these terms. They hear, I'm depressed, every time someone comes in and they're sad. They could have a marital problem. They could have a spiritual issue. They could have a child issue. And so I think what's happening is they're kind of getting beaten down. Same thing with anxiety. They're getting beaten down to the point that they're tending to deny those more and push that off on a spiritual road. The same thing you also see is you do not see the overprescribing of antipsychotic medications. No one goes to a general practitioner and says, I really think sometimes that my dresser drawers are talking to me, and so would you just give me a little Risperidone and I'll be okay. But lots of people go and say, you know, I'm really sad all the time. And they quickly write them a prescription for antidepressants. Or I have anxiety issues, and they quickly write them a prescription for benzodiazepines and tell them to take them whenever they need them. You just don't see that with schizophrenia or even with bipolar disorder. People don't describe that in a subclinical sense. So again, I think what these pastors tend to see are people who are on medications, who have problems that could be dealt with through counseling or therapy, who are more dependent or looking to the medication to fix, say, a marital issue. So I think there's some legitimacy in the reason that they have a tendency to move that way, although I still think it's naivete that in their understanding. Now, when they're asked specifically, and this was because of one of our earlier studies, a very large percentage of individuals in which their disorder had been denied, of that 30 to 40%, were told that they should literally stop taking their medication at that moment, because that was some type of a spiritual failure for them to take that. So they were asked specifically about these disorders in separate questions to rate the usefulness of medication in treating that disorder. And although the scale's a little odd there, there actually is a significant difference. The schizophrenia and bipolar do not differ, but they do differ significantly from depression and anxiety, which differs significantly from ADHD. Everything differs from ADHD in this instance. So they rated ADHD medication as least efficacious of the disorders, and then depression, anxiety in the middle. And I think that's very consistent with what we see in their descriptions of what they believe the origin of that disorder is. So again, I think particularly with the ADHD being the lowest here, I think that really kind of starts to back up some of the things that I've seen, particularly in Christian writing and Christian books. There are enormous number of anti-psychology, anti-psychiatry books in the Christian press, and a lot of them will focus on ADHD as an example of psychiatry, psychology dismissing sinful behavior or dismissing wrong behavior, and if appropriate parenting would bring this into line. So one of the things I think is interesting about this study, even though our sample is a little bit, our sample is a little bit biased, is, you know, this is a very mainstream denomination. This is not a fringe element of the faith. These are highly educated individuals. A majority had either a master's degree or a doctoral degree. They're affluent, large churches, suburban areas, predominantly white. So in this instance, these individuals should have access to the mental health community. They also should, in their training, as we saw, they've come in contact with training in the relationship to mental health. But even in this group, which you would imagine would be the least likely to show these kind of biases towards mental disorders, we actually still see them here, and they're only more extreme the further we move away from the middle. And so I think that the sample is very useful in the context of helping us understand some of the things we found earlier. Unfortunately, the sample size probably is going to preclude us from publishing it, that's where we are. I'm now interested in a second line of research and why are Texas Baptists so unresponsive to surveys. There certainly must be something there. But as we move forward in our research, we're particularly looking now at what exactly is it theologically or in their belief system that makes them believe that indeed depression has more of a spiritual aspect to it than, say, bipolar disorder, which both are mood disorders. In fact, bipolar disorder has a component of depression. So why would you rate them so differently? So, and then we want to be able to mold our workshops that we do for pastors kind of in those directions and in looking ultimately to the specific scripture or theological text that they hold to say this is why, this is this way or that way. And I thank you for your time. You can maybe take the question. It does raise Mark's question. Now, we do have that data. We do actually have that data, and a majority of them did offer counseling at the church. Yeah, absolutely. We do have that data. You're right about the women pastors, and that was specific. We wanted to go into a denomination that was predominantly male, specifically to try to investigate more this idea that women were being denied more often, although that we found that in our earlier study. We did not see that necessarily here, but again, it's a little bit of a biased sample. But we did specifically ask about counseling. How many of them offer themselves personally pastoral counseling, how many of them have lay counseling ministries in the church, how many of them have counseling ministries. A majority, I would say 60 to 70% said that they offer counseling themselves and or they have a lay counseling or counseling ministry within the church. So they're seeing people with these problems. It's just that their perception of them is a little bit biased. Right. And we did ask in the referral questions specifically about psychological counseling versus biblical and things like that. But we do need to go back into a sample and look at the type of counseling that's offered. Because certainly in those churches that offer biblical, or it tends to be called biblical counseling or neuthetic counseling, they're much, much more likely to deny that these are mental illnesses. And I've had many conversations in the context of that. And that truly is that's what's going on. Right. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that one of the things is they're turned off by this survey. Here's this university professor, psychologist, and he's going to do this, which makes this data even more interesting because these are the ones who are receptive to that, and yet you still see a consistent bias in it. So. Right. Right. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They and from the questions that we have, it still seems that what they the pastor that we're talking with, their senior pastors, basically doesn't really perceive that there are mentally ill people in their congregations. They basically say they never see them. And so it's still a very, very interesting thing. So we're continuing on, and I'm running out of time, so I thank you.